Hello and welcome to HealthCast. Rashid Davis, clinical associate professor in the School of Health Professions at Stony Brook University, was featured in an episode from C4E Presents, a podcast from Stony Brook's Collaborative for the Earth. In this episode, titled Hidden Health Impacts, Dr. Davis discusses how rising temperatures and poor air quality often exacerbate chronic diseases. Davis provides some recommendations for how to address these concerns and explains how these topics are being integrated into the medical curriculum at Stony Brook University. We are excited to share this conversation with you, and we hope you enjoy.
The links between extreme weather events and our health are well known. A heat wave brings 100-plus temperatures to a major urban center, or fires in Canada bring smoke pouring into the Northeast. These are the headline stories that come to mind when we think of the health impacts of climate change. But far less appreciated are the impacts of climate change on our health day-to-day, how rising temperatures and air quality concerns can exacerbate chronic diseases such as kidney disease, asthma, cardiovascular problems, and even our mental health. Today we talk to an expert on the front lines of this battle to keep us healthy, even as air pollution and extreme weather pose new challenges for our community.
Stony Brook's Study Abroad program welcomes you to apply for a full semester as well as summer and winter opportunities to explore and implement solutions to address our changing environment in countries like Madagascar, Tanzania, Jamaica, and elsewhere. Engaging with climate change will take a global effort, and you can start right here at Stony Brook. Visit stonybrook.edu/studyabroad.
This is C4E Presents, a podcast from Stony Brook's Collaborative for the Earth. I'm Heather Lynch. We're addressing a broad array of environmental problems that are being studied right here on Stony Brook University's campus. And we're having conversations with scholars, experts, and researchers who are concerned about the threats facing our planet, what it means for our world and local culture, and how we might seek solutions to these vexing problems. Joining me now is Rashid Davis, clinical associate professor in the Stony Brook School of Health Professions, studying, among other things, Black maternal health and the effects of perinatal depression in Black women. So Rashid, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Though we often think of climate change as being something that's bad for non-human animals, rising temperatures are expected to drive a number of negative health outcomes for humans as well, from increased dehydration and kidney disease, infections, adverse mental health outcomes, pregnancy complications, and cardiovascular and pulmonary issues, to name just a few. So are you hearing of such complications in your own practice?
Absolutely. I was just reading a study that came out about maternal health in general. And did you know that our ever-changing climate, especially your air pollutant, could have negative outcomes on pregnancy, right? So for example, the increasing ozone, right, could cause inflammatory responses in the body that could lead to placental insufficiency. That could lead to fetal growth, developmental delays, and growth restriction, and even preterm births. And this is how climate change has directly impacted pregnancy outcomes.
Wow. So what would you advise pregnant women to do differently in light of some of these air pollution quality issues?
Air filters. Air filters are wonderful. Having them in your sleeping environments does help to improve your air quality. And especially days where the air quality index is very poor, we recommend you to stay indoors. Or again, you could wear a mask if you have to be outdoors. But trying to improve your overall air quality, having plants in the home could certainly help to mitigate that as well.
Well, I have an air filter in my office, so I appreciate that as well. I mean, it's interesting just thinking about that air pollution is not equally distributed throughout the year. And I'm not that you would necessarily know the answer, but I'd be curious to know whether we see more of these complications at certain times of the year, because people that are pregnant in the summer, for example, when ozone levels tend to be higher, so those late summer, early fall births might be more at risk than ones that are, you know, women that are pregnant at other times of the year.
Yes, that's true. But pollutants stick around all year long, right? Not specific. They're a little bit higher, right? Because heat does increase ozone. But again, take, for example, this fall. The temperatures have been increasingly higher for longer periods of time, leaving the pollutants sticking around, also causing irritation in the lungs, also affecting cardiovascular activity. So again, this is not necessarily a summer, fall event. This is like an all-year event that we have to pay attention to these issues.
Yes. And of course, it's not just outdoor air quality, but indoor air quality can also be problematic. So
In some ways, there's no winning, but air filters are a great suggestion. I want to ask about chronic kidney disease, because that's one issue that I read a lot about as an outcome of climate change, but I know very little about what causes chronic kidney disease and how to prevent it. So is this something that results from chronic dehydration? And is there more that we can do to prevent it besides just staying well hydrated?
Droughts, right, let's think about it, having lack of access to clean water could certainly decrease kidney functions, right? So that's one. Also, again, comes back to air quality. Irritants in the lung causing inflammation, right? Just bear with me a little bit, the physiology. Some of the inflammation causes vasoconstriction, reducing oxygen flow to our vital organs. One of those organs are the kidneys, right? So with the air pollutants, dehydration, decreased oxygen to our vital organs could certainly result in kidney dysfunction. Absolutely.
So that's interesting because I hadn't thought of that, but I spend very little time thinking about the kidneys. But while we're talking about it, I guess it doesn't matter how well hydrated you are if vasoconstriction is keeping, you know, fluid from passing naturally through the kidneys.
Absolutely.
So we certainly don't have the extreme heat here on Long Island that we see in other parts of the country, but it can get really hot in the summer. And so I'm curious, what do you advise your patients do to stay safe in the heat of the summer?
Just as a side note, heat emergencies are the number one climate change related killer. And we have to understand that our vulnerable populations, our elderly, our young ones, our pregnant people, and underserved communities, lack of access to these cooling centers. I would usually recommend being in a community where you're able to receive heat alerts, text messaging, having air conditioning units. And underserved low-income communities may not have access to adequate air conditioning, and they live in more urban populated areas. So things I could recommend in the community, planting trees to help to cool the environment, staying hydrated again, knowing where your cooling centers are. For example, in a city like Philadelphia, they do have heating alerts and cooling center alerts so that individuals are aware of where to go if they need that respite from the heat.
Yeah, certainly a loss of trees is a big environmental justice issue as well, because wealthier communities tend to have more shade, more trees. Mm-hmm. And that's something that drives, I think, a lot of this urban heat island effect, where you have communities that have lost a lot of their trees, and it's just brutally hot, not just during the day, but I think from a health perspective, it's maybe even more critical that it stays hot at night, and these sort of high nighttime temperatures I know can take a toll on the body. Yeah. You know, we've talked a little bit about air pollution, and air pollution is a huge issue. And we've had some notable periods of poor air quality in our region due to fires further north in Canada. And actually just this week, we were getting smoke from fires burning in Western Massachusetts. So why is air quality a concern, and how do you balance the concerns about poor air quality against the longstanding recommendations to stay active and get exercise? Mm-hmm. It seems like, especially in summer, these two imperatives sometimes run counter to one another.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the quality in terms of the smoke, that was pretty interesting, because we typically don't have these problems on our side of the country. And what we noticed was an increase in hospitalizations in the emergency department, over 50% from asthma exacerbation, cardiovascular events. So remember, these pollutants enter the lungs and cause inflammation and irritation. So we did see a spike in the hospitalizations that came in for those emergencies. And again, we do recommend individuals to stay active, but to check their air quality index before going outside. If it's poor air quality, we do recommend you stay inside, and you could be active in the home as well for poor, where there's poor air quality.
Yeah, I guess a home gym or maybe a external gym, you know, where you could stay indoors, but also get some cardiovascular exercise.
Absolutely.
So Stony Brook educates a large number of medical professionals, including yourself, each year across all of its medical professional schools. And I'm curious, has climate change filtered into the curriculum yet? And if not, do you see that changing in the years to come?
It has. I actually also teach the infectious diseases course in our program. And I have actually seen an increase in some of the vector-borne illnesses. And I also like to bring climate change to the forefront. For example, infections like dengue fever, right? those were typically diseases that were limited to tropical and subtropical areas. And now we're seeing a spike in our region with these diseases. So again, we are preparing our students to understand how to identify and properly treat these diseases never treated 10, 20 years ago here in the United States. You would see these diseases when you went to those other endemic regions. But now we are actually incorporating them in our curriculum, dengue fever, malaria, because again, these vectors are staying around longer because of the warmer temperature. They're breeding more and they're infecting more people. So malaria is not only limited to poorer countries now, we're seeing it here in the United States. And lastly, Lyme disease. We are seeing an increase, an uptick, no pun intended, in Lyme disease cases. I actually had a firefighter last week that was out fighting fire in Massachusetts, and he came in with a tick bite. And those are things that we normally would see here in Long Island, but we're seeing them more in New York City as well because of the rise in temperature. And we have these vector-borne illness spreading in areas. It's called a shift in these vector-borne diseases. They're spreading in areas where you typically wouldn't normally see them. So yes, we are trying to incorporate this in our curriculum as well for our students to be aware.
Yeah, another one that comes to mind for me is Zika, which is I don't hear as much about nowadays, but it was a really big deal maybe 8 or 10 years ago.
Yes, it was. Zika, again, another vector-borne disease. We're not hearing about it too much in the United States, but it's still very prominent in South America and some of the Caribbean countries. We're still seeing those vector-borne diseases, but right now, not too much here in New York or the United States.
Thankfully. Coming back to Lyme disease for a second, that's one that strikes close to home for, you know, most Long Islanders. I think I've had Lyme disease 3 times since I've moved here. Are we getting any closer to a vaccine? Do you know what, if there's anything on the horizon? My understanding is we had a vaccine at one point and it's no longer being used. So I'm just curious.
Still haven't heard of anything, but I do have a colleague who works diligently. I could definitely follow up with him. But still, we're just treating prophylactically. We're treating to prevent those sequelae, the cardiovascular complications as a result of Lyme disease. So I've been very proactive at treating before it progresses.
Yeah, no, it can be devastating and certainly almost one that Long Islanders expect to get, which isn't good because I think we sometimes don't do all we could to prevent getting it. Well, in any case, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. I've really learned a lot and I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
That was Rashid Davis, Clinical Associate Professor in the Stony Brook School of Health Professions. To learn more about Rashid's research, you can find her on the faculty page at healthprofessions.stonybrookmedicine.edu. I'm Heather Lynch. That's a wrap-up of another episode of C4E Presents. Our goal is to bring you closer to environmental issues with interviews from scholars, experts, and researchers from Stony Brook University, exploring and explaining the state of our planet and creating actionable solutions for climate change. Visit us at stonybrook.edu/C4E/podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. In our next episode, we will be speaking to poet and environmental humanities scholar David Taylor in a wide-ranging conversation about the power of narrative to tell the story of our planet and our relationship to it.